Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Managing Director of Elcott Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And today it's my pleasure to have with us Alessandro De Luca. Alessandro is the Chief Information Officer for Merck Healthcare, which is, of course, one of the largest healthcare groups in the world. In 2016, he was elected the Inspirational Leader of the Year within the Merck Biopharma division. And in 2015, he was awarded the number one pharma most influential supply chain executive in Europe, among the top five across all industries by the SCM magazine. Previously to his pharma supply chain experience, he worked in Procter & Gamble, which obviously is in FMCG. He was there for 20 years, holding positions across innovation and marketing, manufacturing, engineering, supply chain management. He operated in countries such as China, Russia, Venezuela, Spain, and several Eastern European countries. Alessandro, it's a pleasure to have you with us today, and thanks a lot for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot for the nice introduction. It's always a pleasure doing this type of podcast because it's a mutual learning and fantastic opportunity.
Super. And tell us maybe a little bit, because it's not often that we see people and executives like yourself making a transition from supply chain to a CIO role. So tell us a little bit, how did that come about?
Sure. Absolutely. Thanks for the question. And by the way, this is one of the highest rated questions that I've always been asking several, even by friends, that they're saying, hey, but you are an operation guy, a business guy. How has it happened that now are in the wonderful world of digital and IT and so on and so forth? So, I mean, it's, again, it's nothing happens by chance. And I'll tell you what it happens. But before to tell you the story of the background, I really want to say, this is currently my best assignment ever. I mean, the level of learnings, of technology discover, of personal and professional development that I'm having every day in this job, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. So if there is something that I would say is that I would recommend to anybody who works in business to have a development opportunity in the digital world, whatever is the role, and then come back to the business or vice versa, I think it's really, really great. Any case, to answer your question, how this started and how it went, is that when I was the head of supply chain operations in Merck Healthcare, that was more or less 3-4 years ago, I was running into a formal digital program to drastically improve the supply chain. This is where we initiated the concept of self-driving supply chain, and I got deeper and deeper into the technology, and even mainly thanks to my team, we were extremely successful in this journey. To such an extent that one day the CEO, she came to me and said, wow, I see the progress that's been done in the digital space of supply chain. Why don't you move then in the overall digital space and you will become the sector CIO to start reapplying what you've done in supply chain across the other area, R&D, marketing, and sales and commercial. And when I was asked to take this opportunity, I questioned myself and I discussed that, but I'm not sure I have the technological know-how. I'm not sure I have the competence to move into IT. I mean, I never did any IT work before, and I don't have an informatic background. And the answer was, well, this is exactly what we need. We need business people that embrace and learn the technological world so that the technological digital world can really serve and accelerate business value. And I think so, this visionary concept from my CEO was exactly right. And that's why I say, I mean, I'm delighted about the job. And of course, he's progressing extremely well. And this is because I think, and like I said at the beginning, it's fantastic to have business people moving to digital and vice versa, also the other play around. I mean, having digital technology geeks moving into the business. The more we merge the two worlds, the more we make these boundaries blurry, the better we'll be able to accelerate what is called digital transformation, that in reality is a mantra. But what truth of the matter is that how digital can accelerate the business progression. So that's a little bit the background and why I and the story of why I moved. But also I want to provide a perspective that I truly believe that that was one of the pilot in several other companies also happened, is definitely very successful. And I invite a lot of other colleagues to do the same and vice versa.
Fascinating, because on a personal level, I would tend to agree a lot with your perspective, and digital is pretty much transforming all industries and permeating all our lives across the world. It's just that in a lot of what I see from a consulting perspective, in a lot of companies, what happens, it's kind of seen maybe as a little bit of a fluffy kind of a thing, or not quite tangible on how exactly and how practically will it transform the business. So unless there's this kind of moves, and you do need a visionary leader, and I'm very happy that you mentioned the example with your CEO, because that also must happen. The CEO and the C-level of the company needs to drive that shift and that cross-pollination, right, of skill sets from supply chain to IT to digital to, you know, finance. It can be across the board. Unless that happens also, it cannot happen by itself or in an island. So great example, and thanks for sharing that with us. And you also mentioned the term self-driving supply chain. Tell us a little bit also about that, and how far away are you at Merck in terms of having a self-driving supply chain?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this, again, like I said before, was the origin of my, touch point with the digital world. So you asked me about self-driving supply chain, how near we are and how far we are. We are very near and very far. And let me explain it very clearly. So why, first of all, what do we mean about self-driving supply chain? I guess a lot of people are talking about these terms. It's very sexy and so on and so far. I remember my first interview that I did in Wall Street Journal, that was now 4 years ago, when I was talking about self-driving supply chain. They were listening to me like I was a visionary leader of the future, sort of Elon Musk and so on and so forth. Now it's much more down to earth. What is it in practice? It means, at least for us, it means very simply to continuously balance supply with demand in automated way and with an intelligent capabilities around. So I've said three words. I said continuously balance. This is very important, because what does it mean? It means that we all have been born and bred with the time in which we had our MRP run throughout the night. Then we were going to work. We would check the MRP run. We were preparing the supply schedule and so on and so forth. Now with this self-driving supply chain, the system run continuously. So it's like having an MRP run every 30 seconds and so on and so far. It's like having the engine of your car continuously updating the data. And this is fantastic, because of course, we all know what does it mean to have a system that runs in parallel versus a system that runs in batches in series one by one. So that's the first element that continues. The second element is that, well, we want this system of supply and demand balanced in automated way. And this means that we want to touch the system and the data itself as little as possible. So all the data being gathered through the different ERPs of the company, and we have many, through the different supply system, planning system, are all touchless feeding into this solution, I would call it, without the need of any intervention. Our mantra is that we want the demand forecasting that is independent by the human being. And then the last element is the intelligence around it. And this is the sort of cognitive layer that the system provides that enables, again, to check all these demand signal and to prescribe in real time what is the right supply planning and supply schedule. So these three elements of having continuous, automated, intelligent balancing of supply versus demand is what we call, or we vulgarize, in a self-driving supply chain. Now you ask how near we are and how far we are. We are very near, in the sense that we put in place very successfully already several years ago the descriptive layer. So we have a perfect end-to-end visibility across all the elements of supply chain in real time, so continuous. We are, since a couple of years, already very advanced with a machine learning-based forecasting system. So we have predictive demand modeling that are nearly touchless, so that is working. And we are now in the last step, that is on the prescriptive element. We are now piloting against this intelligent layer of gathering the demand and prescribe the supply. So I would say that it's like a self-driving car. It runs autonomously across the roads, but still we have people driving on the driving seat, touching the steering wheel every now and then. So it's very near, because we are running with a car, using the metaphor, but it's very far. Why is very far? Because in the meantime, the technology is advancing so much that, of course, create the challenge even more. We said, okay, I mean, probably it's not only balancing supply demand, but it's also gathering all the real-time information from production. Oh, probably it's not only gathering real-time information from production, probably it's coordinating also supplier and customer in real-time. So we are expanding the scope of this very ambitious program, and that makes that, you know, the bar is setting higher and higher by each day. So that's why it's a sort of keep running towards the goal. This is, in summary, what we've done it, what it means for us. To explain that, again, we are progressing extremely well, but a lot to do and a lot of improvement in this area.
Mm. Because also you have three different divisions and they're in Merck and their needs are quite different as well, right? So on the one side, you have Merck Healthcare, you have Merck Life Sciences, and I think you have Performance Materials.
Yes.
Let's go a little bit also in terms of technological differences and challenges for each business unit from a supply chain as well as from an IT perspective, because of course there's quite a bit of nuances, right, in terms of how you deal with their each and their products. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think like any single company, we cannot talk about one single model. So every company has different sector, division, you name it. And this brings us two challenges. One is that how do we implement the technology and how do we implement across the overall corporation, considering the trade-off across the different sectors. I mean, in our case, are three different sectors. In another company, maybe different. So how do we overcome these two challenges? So the first come is that the first one is definitely applies for every single implementation. And obviously was one of the challenges for our implementation of self-driving supply chain. And it was like, how do we make it successful and being adopted in such a way that drive business value? Interesting enough, at the beginning of the project, we were all within brackets scared about the technology. I mean, will the technology works? I mean, will that create disruption in the system in terms will stop my operation? Will be the new integration with ERP working? You name it. So all our discussion, pre-implementation, were all about the technological challenges to face. After the implementation and after being quite successful into it, we discussed together what were the learnings of that implementation. And the learning were, I mean, the two biggest challenge has not been at all the technological element. Of course, there is a challenge in terms of new technology, but it's been master data accuracy and change management system. And why is that? One reason. Any automated system, intelligent system, continuous processing system relies on that. And expose then all the accuracy of the data throughout the decision-making process. So for us, it was important to get those data clean. As many companies, we discovered that the majority of data were perfect clean, but a lot of them had to be clean. So it took us between 6 to 8 months to really achieve a level of master data accuracy that would enable the system to run perfectly smooth. Because again, I mean, the technology that was our fear was running very well, but the results weren't reliable because, of course, the data accuracy was not correct. So first learning, data accuracy. Second learning, the change management system. And this goes again with my metaphor of before of the self-driving car. So fundamentally, we have the is a paramount that people understand the new solution and embrace it and adopt it. There is nothing worse than something that you say, I mean, I have a fantastic solution, but then in any case, I keep working with my Excel or with my SAP system and I don't embrace it. So the work that we have to do in terms of change management in explaining, engaging, and convincing the people that this would enhance their work and the skill set was really major. So interesting enough, and that answer the beginning of your question, is that how do we make sure that we implement system across the corporation? The answer is that, well, don't focus too much on the technology know-how. I mean, that will come, but master data accuracy and change management of people are the key driver to success. And this enables us to implement this solution across the three sectors, across healthcare that I'm leading, across life science, and across performance material. Because again, we focus on these two elements. Then we have to, of course, as the three sectors have a different go-to-market strategy, then we have to adapt the go-to-market strategies to the solution itself. So I'll make an example. In healthcare is fundamental to serve our patient. I mean, we want to have a service level near to 100%. So for us, this is absolutely the priority and absolutely must. So we focus at the beginning our implementation to maximize the service to patient. In performance material, the item was let's manage inventory, because inventory is extremely critical in performance material, by the way, also in life science, because again, having redundancies of inventory, it creates a need on the P&L and so on. So the solution, again, was focused to solve that specific business issue. So this is how, I mean, to answer your question, how we implemented successfully in across the corporation, leveraging the technology layer combined with the right master data accuracy and combined with the proper people change manager journey. But then we differentiate the use according to the business need, because again, the three different sectors may have a different business need or a different requirement to win on the marketplace.
And specifically, you mentioned that your business unit, healthcare, of course, is very much focused on the patient, which it should.
Yes.
Are there, if we had to go a little bit deeper, are there some specific strategies or go-to-market from a tech perspective, a tech enablement perspective, IT, digital perspective that you've put into place to be closer to your patients, to be closer to your customers? I don't know, can you give us some examples of where maybe you've come into play from a CIO perspective to enable the business to be closer to your end clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the question. Very valid one. I answer in parallel. So we have in healthcare a program that is called S1 for patient. That has the meaning that we want to work as one organization across R&D, manufacturing, supply chain, marketing, sales, commercial, distribution, IT, legal, HR, for our patient. And that means, of course, working together in terms of breaking silos, working together in terms of a functional aligned goal. But it means also, exactly to your point, developing platforms that are nearer to patient as much as we can. And a couple of examples is that we have successfully implemented and roll out globally a system that is called patient support system that enable to provide our patient the so-called service, what we call it, beyond and above the pill. But I think the overall pharma industry is firmly moving towards the concept that it's not only the pill or the drug or the treatment that enable to provide a better treatment to the patient. It's also what is beyond the pill and above it. That means that having medical device, tracking real time your blood pressure, your adherence, your heartbeat, and so on and so far. Having a digital system that tracks real time how you are behaving, linking with the HCP, the doctor, and so on. All these services around the pills are the key to provide better treatment to the patient. And our patient support system guarantees a sort of 24 hours, we could call it hotline, when again, the patient can call us and say, hey, I have this treatment, I have this pill, what can I do with this condition? I'm traveling there, how can you make sure that you supply me my medicine set? So this is definitely one of the key. In terms of platforming, for instance, now we are piloting with another supplier called Viva, is very well known in terms of pharma as being leader in the industry, a link within their CRM system, so customer relationship manager, with their promo material system and regulating system. So again, we are, from IT standpoint, providing platform and solution that links the customer relationships with the medical needs, with the regulatory requirement in one single solution that offer better service for our final customer, that is the patient.
You mentioned the supply chain or supply chain partners, logistics partners, and we do have a lot of listeners that come from that side of service providers to the industry, to the manufacturers. In the context of this forever evolving and the bar setting up higher and higher and higher, like you mentioned, in terms of expectations and capabilities, and you have Industry 4.0 and all of that, the question was, what are you looking for in your, what kind of capabilities and characteristics are you looking for in your partners, may it be on the supply chain or logistics side, so that they best support what Merck is doing as well?
It's a very good point. So we are looking forward about two things. Obviously, collaboration. So collaboration is absolutely key because every single company or every single network is similar and different. And the only way to solve these similarities and differences is to intimately collaborate to drive common solution. It's like, I would say that IT solution today are a perfect mix between a prêt-à-porter, so something that is like a dress ready to use, and a tailor-made, something that is a dress that you really have your tailor, that take your measure, and so on and so forth. I think that all IT solutions are exactly in the middle of it. So if something that has a level of standardization that is 80%, but a 20% of tailor-made solution to perfectly fit your need. Because like I said before, at the end, the key performance indicator for a successful solution is adoption. And adoption only comes for that part of tailorization that enables your system to adapt to the single business process, but also sort of standardization that enables the implementation worldwide. So collaborative tailor-made solution is one of the characteristics that we're looking within our partners and within, I would say, our solution provider and so on and so forth. Then the other element is that we want that their solution fulfill two functionalities. The first functionality is automation. So any new digital solution obviously should automate the task. I mean, this is a basic productivity requirement. That's why, I mean, at the end, we all use computer, internet-based solution, and so on, to have a better and automated solution than before we probably were doing manually, like handwriting. I mean, before we were handwriting, now we have computer that automate the process of handwriting. But the second element to automation is augmentation. And this is key. That means that the solution should add value to the current system, should not only drive a productivity enhancement, but should drive also the element of value creation. And this is really fundamental because this is one of the source of competitive advantage. I mean, there are now several companies in any space that provide better automation system, but is the augmentation that really makes the difference. So having a system that enables me to automate the task and to augment the value of it, that is really what I'm looking forward when I talk with the different partners that we have. So collaboration in order to have tailor-made solution that fits for us and have a great adoption, and a solution that have a combination of automation and augmentation are the two requirements that tell us, hey, I mean, this is a fantastic partner to look for or a fantastic partner to engage with. Now, is it easy to find those partners? Absolutely not. Are we always successful in our scouting? Absolutely not. And this also, I think, is part of this new culture that we are embracing today. It's all about, you know, I mean, somebody said it's learn fast, fail fast, try fast. And this is exactly the philosophy that we are trying to adopt, is that, I mean, let's learn as much as we can. Let's try as much as we can. Let's fail in the positive sense. So let's accept that not everything should be perfect. And sometimes we made a mistake in identifying a partner, or sometimes a solution doesn't work. That's fine. We adopt it, we change it, and we move on.
And moving the discussion a little bit to the front of e-commerce, because it's a trend that has basically taken over our whole and has permeated our whole lives and as consumers and coming back into the realm of healthcare, which you are responsible for. How does that play into how you do business today? How does that impact your supply chain? Tell us a little bit about the e-commerce in specific.
Absolutely. E-commerce is becoming prominent in everything we do. I remember that I was working in, I've been working 20 years in Procter & Gamble, and at that time, and still today, by the way, P&G, the mantra is be customer focused and making sure that we reach the customer that ordered the product. Well, now in fast-moving consumer goods, the customer who ordered a product is the fridge, because everything is so automated that you have a fridge that ordered by e-commerce a product that get continuous replenishment. Now, that's, of course, we have seen it also recently. I mean, this was all on newspaper. This young lady that used even the fridge to tweet because her iPhone was not being used and so on and so forth. So, and by the way, we have done also recent interviews to individuals, very young individuals in the age of 22, 23. And those individuals, mainly in Asia, the area where you work, Radu, mainly in Asia, they said, I mean, we've never been to a mall. We've never been to a shopping place. We order 100% of our thing through e-commerce. So this is really to explain that definitely e-commerce in the business and in the supply chain is really playing a significant role. And in our sector in life science, we have more than 1 billion sales on our two-hour e-commerce platform and so on and so forth. And even healthcare is expanding into the e-commerce situation, because if you think about it, I mean, what are the trends that will happen in the future or even in the present in the healthcare industry? I think the trend is personalized medicine, is home delivery, is really anytime related again to the medical device and support system around the drug or the treatment. All these, they are personalized medicine and home delivery are all about e-commerce and the so-called Amazon experience and so on and so forth. That means that we have to immediately think and leverage our supply chain. So the good news is that supply chainers in the e-commerce world will become even more prominent, because e-commerce is all about the supply chain. Fundamentally, I mean, you know, Amazon, the success of Amazon and the Alibaba of this world is all about, because one, I can choose whatever I want, but that's very easy. But two is that I can get the product and my home in the shortest possible time. And this is thanks to their efficient warehousing and cross-docking and so on and so forth. So in the e-commerce world, supply chain will play a prominent role. And this is why they intersect very much with the digital part that we were talking before, because fundamentally it's all about two things: having the information flow going upstream in the supply chain as smooth as possible, as fast as possible, with less bullwhip possible, and having a product flow that goes as smooth as possible to the final customer. So this is where e-commerce that is the present and will become even more prominent in the early future will require a complete change and will make supply chain at the core of everything we do. That's very good news for all of us who work in supply chain and digital, but it's also a challenge because obviously whoever is not able to adapt in the new world, whoever is not able to agilize his supply chain, well, will lose competitive advantage.
And there's also some pretty fundamental additional layer of challenges which come with e-commerce, namely, just as an example, so you have safety, you have compliance, you have traceability that you need to ensure of your products. How do you deal with, I guess these are some of the key ones, because you're not dealing, you're not dealing with a with a pair of shoes. You're actually dealing with medicine that can can seriously impact people's lives. And how do you look at this element of safety, compliance, traceability?
Yeah, I think you pointed out extremely right. I mean, we at least in the healthcare sector, at the end, we are supplying. Medicine to patient that should aim to improve lives so as to be with the highest possible quality, as to be delivered with the highest possible condition. So if you're talking about cold chain, if you're talking about specific product, as to arrive to the customer in the right way and so on. And we have to deal, as a consequence of that, with the highest quality standard, with very strict regulatory environment and requirements and so on and so forth. Now, having said that, I should say a couple of things. So first of all, the all regulatory agencies in the world are also moving towards a much more open and agile attitude towards leveraging digital technology. So accepting digital transaction as a form of certification, so accepting against digital solution, and they'll help us a lot to make our supply chain much more agile and so on and so forth. But I think I go back to the mindset concept because when I was working, like I told you before, I've been working 20 years in the space of fast-moving consumer goods. And in the early 90s, I mean, that was exactly the same challenge, perhaps a little bit less, but in terms of regulatory requirement, but still the same challenge that all fast-moving consumer goods companies were having. So how can I keep supplying with higher service level to my customer, still maintaining the highest quality of detergents, of shampoos, and so on and so far, and reducing the speed to market and really make it profitable? So it was really, I remember I was in a lot of discussion in P&G at the time, it seems like an equation impossible to square. In reality, we did it. I mean, all fast-moving consumer goods evolved toward requirements of standard for the final customer. And that's exactly the journey that the pharma industry is embracing right now. So how we can supply agile and fast to our customer without any compromise in their quality, safety, legal, and regulatory. It starts from the mindset. So the technology will be there. I'll make some example of technology that can help us, but it starts from the mindset. It starts from the mindset of the people to accept that it can be achieved, that we can indeed guarantee the same level of quality, safety, and legal requirement or not repeating, that is a must mandatory, but still do it in a more agile way. And I'll make you an example. I'll take a company that we've been using for the serialization one. The company is called TrackWise, and for regulatory requirements, we have been implementing serialization across all our SKU. And this has been really a sort of, okay, by regulation, we have to do it. But now, together with TrekWise, we understood the value of gathering all this data through serialization, and we use this data to predict failure across the supply chain so we can replenish faster, and it be because we can anticipate potential issues. So this is a fantastic example in which a regulatory requirements with the right mindset and collaboration to go before is transforming a competitive advantage. Because now, thanks to the data that we collect through the serialization, putting in place an advanced analytic layer on top of that, we move to a predictive model that can enable us to potentially predict, avoid, and eliminate failures, and to smoothly supply the market faster.
That's a fascinating example, actually. And I love your, focus on mindset, because I'm so much with you on that one. It is always around mindset, and it's never really around not having the technology, because technology is an enabler at the end of the day, and there's all different pieces of technology that we can use. But the issue is, are we having the right mindset? One. And two, back to the initial part of the conversation, which you stressed highly on, and I think that's where a lot of companies also get it wrong, is do you have the right people to do the change management process correctly and to get the organization on board that process and are on the train, not, you know, not kind of fighting the change. So that's another thing. But these are really good points. And I'd love to go now a little bit more tactically. So from a strategic perspective, mindset, how do you think about it? How do you use it as a potentially as a even a business advantage that you mentioned? Tactically, there's a couple of technologies, right? You have IoT, you have... Yes. You have blockchain. I need to ask you also about blockchain. So let's just take this too, because they seem to be more prominent, right? So let's start with IoT and then blockchain, and tell us a little about how much do you use it? Do you see them practical enough at this moment in time, maybe in the future? What's your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's we can spend a couple of hours to talk about blockchain and then 3 hours around IoT. So I'll try to answer shortly. But those obviously are such a broad and interesting topics that it is worth talking. I mean, we cannot miss it. So blockchain. Blockchain is out of doubt something that we, Merck, we Pharma, we work, should embrace in the future. Because, I mean, I remember some time ago, there was somebody who was saying, well, it's not about companies to compete, it's about supply chain to compete. I would even broader the perspective, it's not about supply chain, it's about supply network to compete. Now, in order to make a supply network operate efficient and effectively, there are two elements. We need to be safe information and product sharing, and trusting this information and product sharing across the overall network. And the network is, of course, the downstream network of customer, wholesales, pharmacy, hospital. It's also the upstream network of several CMOs, material supplier, medical device, and so on and so forth. And knowing the challenge that we have in several areas about, well, we have it in the world about fake news, but we have also in the business about fake medicine and so on and so forth, having a platform or a technological solution that is blockchain that enable us to give us a trusted and safe understanding of the material and product flow is simply fantastic. Now, like all the new technologies that enter in the market, obviously at the beginning, the ROI is limited. It means that the investment that the company has to do to gather the technology up and running versus the return on investment is not exceptional, because the technology sometimes is not mature, because again, it's not scale up. So, I mean, again, imagine this. We are piloting, again, blockchain in several areas of our supply network. But if you don't have all the players there, you lose advantages, because obviously, I mean, you can certify the supply chain, but if some people are not playing there, it's not yet there, they're not. So it will happen. It's going to happen very soon. Like all the technology with the principle of the hockey stick, it will dramatically accelerate in the future. And then again, it goes back to our previous discussion. It's all about learning, failing and testing again and learning. This is exactly what we are doing with blockchain, to try in several areas to learn and to adapt fast how to use it and how to leverage the value. So blockchain for us is a milestone to the future of the supply chain. Again, not the supply chain, the supply network for a trusted and safe piece. And then, I mean, you may imagine that IoT, I mean, IoT is it's there, it's every day there. If I take our biotech plant, so the plant that I keep with bioreactor to produce this newest treatment, well, these, they operate with such a level of IoT that are in a sort of lights off. That means that all the IoT solution enable us to run the plants really a sort of lights off. But again, I don't think that that is where the IoT will give us a competitive advantage, because everybody will be there. Is in, on the contrary, how to leverage all this set of data that we're going to have it in order to develop predictive models for maintenance and so on and so forth. And then you didn't ask me something that I will add it, is that the third leg of this technology tsunami that's coming, that is AR. And I mean, there is AR and VR. I would say AR because augmented reality is something that we keep using in operation quite a lot. And you can imagine that when you have this mega bioreactor, one of the things that you should try to limit is obviously unexpected maintenance. So you always want to prey on predictive maintenance. And the other thing is to stop partially or completely the operation to try and, to train new people on changeover and so on and so on. And this is where we implemented augmented reality, because augmented reality enabled us to keep the manufacturing up and running while training our operator with these glasses and so on in augmented reality safe environment, and to keep them really playing on changeover. And this again is another breakthrough area that drives real value as we speak.
Mm. No, thanks for adding that. And yeah, I mean it's really mind blowing when we kind of make an exercise of imagination, and in 5 years how even factories can or will look like. And to your point with lights out, I mean there's already factories out there that operate the lights out and there's no human being inside. And
yeah,
I think there was a book written at some point, or there was a, I can't remember exactly, but there was the factory of the future will be one human and one dog, and the dog is there to prevent the human from touching anything, right? So it's or something
exactly
like
that. Right.
Seems like we are going in there, but I really liked your point with at the end of the day, everybody will have access to the same technology, and at the end of the day, the business advantage will be in leveraging your networks and leveraging the data that you manage to, and maybe analyzing that data to the best and to fastest and to the best of your ability to go to market. I will also ask you a little bit of a devil. We got this question that comes more from a devil advocate type of angle, but I think it's a good point to get your thoughts on. The point in the frame of the question was that there's a lot of talk on direct to customers, cutting middlemen using digitalization. However, you're still, Merck as a group still uses and relies in certain markets more than others, but on distributors for enabling sales and distribution downstream. So I guess the question was somewhat, how do you make both models work? Do you ultimately want to remove all middlemen? How do you see this?
Yeah, no, I understand. I reply in the following way, and for once, I mean, I made a little bit show off using a Latin phrase that we're saying in medium stat virtus. That means that in the middle is what is the right solution, to translate a little bit with my poor English. What do I mean is that today, more or less 43% of our distribution model are direct to customer, namely hospitals. So we go directly to them with 24-hour replenishment time, whereas the remaining is a sort of mixed model through distributors or directly to pharmacy and so on and so forth. Is I know I have a friend of mine that has been working in another pharma company we won't mention. They were extensively moving direct to patient and so on and so far. Absolutely. I believe, and that's what we also endorsing as a company, is that the mixed model is the right one. So first of all, normally for some specific medicine or treatment and some advanced infrastructure that in terms of healthcare, obviously it's better to go direct to the final customer. But this cannot be always the case in some emerging market, for example, or for some specific type of medicine, for other example, because sometimes we and even the country lacks the logistic infrastructure to really supply safely and with high quality medicine. So we really have to rely with the middleman or the third party logistic provider, and you name it. So I truly believe that the right model is really the mixed model, leveraging again, one, the type of medicine that we have to distribute, two, the type of infrastructure that exists in the marketplace, and three, what is really best for the patient. Going holistically to one model or to the other one, I don't think one is effective, and I don't think it's also valid for the future.
And again, the world is a big playground. So, we travel a lot. I think it's the nature of our jobs, and of course, it's not the same thing doing business in Southeast Asia versus doing business in Europe versus doing business in North America. I had one of my friends that works in a telecom industry that just posted some pictures of him actually getting physically involved in the delivery of some pretty high and voluminous type of satellites and all of that, and he had to actually ship them by wood boat into some river, into the jungle and all of that. So it's not exactly straightforward depending on the market. So let's be real about that. It's not exactly that you can use the same model. We're not there yet, which probably is a good thing as well.
Absolutely. Probably is a good thing. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. So to keep some diversity in our lives. I'd like to kind of shift the discussion a little bit more to the into the mindset and also into the human capital. We're getting the human capital side, but I want, and there was a very, very good question, a little bit coming back to the first question that I asked you in terms of the changes that you've made in your career, moving from FMCG to and Procter & Gamble to healthcare and Merck, moving from supply chain to IT. A lot of people, different stages of their careers, I think, and what I've experienced in my career as a headhunter, think about it. They have all sorts of fears and all sorts of concerns, but not a lot of people manage to do it. And the questions that quite a few of our audience had for you are, I think, twofold, two big questions. You know, when you made these changes, what were your key drivers that pushed you to make these changes, right, in your career? And as well as what were your key fears, right? So driver and fear, right? Carrot and stick, we all have it, right? So in terms of yourself, Alessandro, what went through your mind in terms of your key drivers and key fears to push you to make these changes in your career?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think one of the drivers, probably the biggest driver that I personally have, because this is really personal. I mean, obviously I cannot, I can share my learnings, but I cannot impose whatever. It's exactly this, the word learn. I truly believe that learning, continuous learning, enables you to motivate, because learning means being able to develop yourself, either personally, either professionally, and that keeps you stimulating and also enable you to connect different dots. You know, if you only work in one area or one country or one specific sector, sure, you will be able to develop yourself. But at the end, having a broader perspective, it really enables to connect you the dot and really learn to move forward. So why did I move from operation into digital? Is to learn. And that's why I said at the beginning, I love my job. It's one of the best jobs because I learn every day. And this is fantastic, particularly in the era where I'm working, that is digital. Well, you will be forced to learn every day. So it's really my motivational passion or mantra that goes with me. Now, what has been, I mean, in the reverse, what has been my biggest fear? My bigger fears in doing this change was not about to not being technological capable, because obviously I am incapable. I will never understand the technology, but would be to really become a technologist. So I always told myself, in order to be successful, I should understand the technology, but again, adding the value that I can bring from an outside-in perspective, that is, well, the technology should serve the business. The technology should really drive improvement and so on and so forth. In fact, one of the biggest challenges that I've seen in the technology space is that people get in love with the latest technology, but not with the latest improvement that the technology will bring. So people get in love with the latest, like iPhone 10 or 11 or Samsung, whatever you see, because they like the technology. Then you ask, just to use again the metaphor, but how does it change your life? Well, eventually it doesn't, but you don't know how many pixels I can do the picture now. Yeah, but that's what's the value added. So that is exactly the point. So the risk and my fear was not to become myself in love with the technology per se, so that I will lose what I bring, that is the fresh perspective to embrace the business. Now, still, it remains a big jump. Still, a lot of times you ask yourself, well, why I did it? Still, a lot of time you feel incompetent in front of people that obviously have the know-how from years and years and years. But I definitely encourage you to do it. There is not such big a satisfaction that going to work and have the possibility to learn and eventually shape the world, because now digital is really shaping the world every single day.
I'll ask you one. I think in my experience, the biggest, and I think this applies to all humans in general, but specifically for career, what if I fail and then I cannot, I think that's something that a lot of people think of. What if I fail and then I cannot easily navigate, especially if you're at the senior level, right? Once you hit a certain level into one's career, it's not necessarily that easy to find positions. So I think a lot of people are also get a little bit stuck in their own mind, not elsewhere, in their own mind, and like, but what if I make this move and then I fail and then it doesn't work out? And then how would you respond to that?
No pain, no gain. If you don't take the risk, you will be stuck in your thing. My answer, because I have a lot of colleagues, peers, and even mentees that I'm working with, is that I tell them, look, if you look in the past, roles were lasting for decennials, company were lasting for centuries, and the know-how was lasting for a lifetime. Now is not anymore like that. company doesn't last centuries, know-how expire very soon, and even roles change so fast that again you have to do it. So it's if you want to maintain your competitive advantage as individual, you have to keep learning and keep trying and keep failing and learning again. I think on the contrary, the risk is to be stuck on your role, to be stuck on your seat, and then it will become the day in which they tell you, well, as a matter of fact, I'm very sorry, we have to shut down the company, or shut down the role, or shut down the function. And then you never develop this learning agility, then you are really in trouble. Mm-hmm. So that's how do I answer the people, and I invite them to do it. And of course, accept setback. Okay. This is very much not in line with the European culture, but on the contrary, Chinese culture and American culture are very much like that. A setback is acceptable. You can do a job or you can change company. You may fail. Well, you jump to another company, another role, and so on and so forth. In Europe, if in your own company you fail a task, then my career is blow up forever. Or even worse, if you're fired from a company, then fine, you're retired. That's not at all the attitude that works in US and China. And by the way, it's not a surprise why these are superpowers.
Mm-hmm. I love your reframe. And in the fact that that is no longer a safety net. Stay put, and you know, don't make noise. Hope for the best. This is really not a solution because, like we discussed before we went on the podcast, change is the only constant, and it can turn out to be quite risky at the end of the day. I wanted to ask you in terms of the skills that you see. Needed now and needed a lot in the next 5 years, may it be in technology, digital, supply chain related, manufacturing related. What do you see as skill sets, hard skills, mindset skills, that soft skills that people really need a lot and there's not enough in the market now? And maybe furthermore, what will be needed even more in the next 5 years?
Yeah. So let me answer that. And then I'm afraid we need to close. It's been very interesting. But I also have to work. Anyways, it's a very, very good question. And I would say that the skill set that that will be in the future, there is soft skill and there is hard skill. So the soft skill, I mentioned it, is the agility to learn, the being collaborative, the make sure you're pragmatic enough that you develop solutions that fit for the business. But then when people ask me, beyond this soft skill, what do you think will be the job of the future that will be required in the supply chain? And I see really three types of jobs that are uprising, for which those skills will be very important and for which we are really scarce of talent. One is digital supply chain architect. And digital supply chain architect is something that we need because with all these new system, having somebody that understand how to architect this solution, but with the know-how of the function, is absolutely needed. How many digital supply chain architects I met in my life? Probably one or two or three. I mean, it's really rare, but those guys make a difference. Then is that all about supply chain data scientists? And here it's another interesting cross of function, and again, where the famous learning story that we said before, it helps. We have a lot of supply chainers. We have an upcoming role of data scientists or functional data scientists, but having people that are able to understand the data in the supply chain and transform that into business insight is still yet to come. There are still very few people that understand how a data pattern is really a business insight driver or it's just something nice to have. For example, I make an example. There are people that tell me, oh, I analyze the demand and there is a data scientist and there is an incredible volatility of the demand. And I say, well, I mean, that's normal because that is a tender market. So you understand. So it's normal to have this volatility. A supply chain data scientist would tell me, look, in that specific tender market, there is an high volatility and hence is not worth to improve the accuracy. Whereas in this other supply chain market, the high volatility is not driven by any structural elements. So we may want to drive any more accurate data science around it to understand if there are business insight to influence the supply chain. So that's very important. And the last point that has always been missing in supply chain, that is a skill and a role, is the supply chain strategies. I still believe that there are a lot of tactical people that are very good operationally, but very few that really see the supply chain strategy for the long term.
Thank you. I mean, very good summary. Alessandro, I won't keep you anymore. I really appreciate all the very, very good case studies, insights, especially the fact that you've made it so practical and tangible and all the metaphors and examples that you use that made it extremely easy to follow, because sometimes these concepts are a little bit, theoretical, but made it very practical. So much appreciate that. And good luck, good luck in your own words, in trying, learning and failing fast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think it's a question of luck, but it helps. However, I think it's a question of mindset. And like we said, that will really make the difference.
Exactly, exactly. Grazie mille and thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Radu. It was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.